Going fishing. Australia's nuclear technology podcast. Hello, listeners. It's been a while. 3 years, I'm ashamed to say. While I constantly reminded myself that I needed to get back into this, I needed to reevaluate how I can produce something regularly of sufficient quality. Thoughts on that after the interview for those interested. But for now, I present Tyrone de Lisle, former Greens member and a keen advocate for nuclear energy in Australia. He's currently working with multiple organisations to promote nuclear energy here and abroad. Enjoy. G'day Tyrone, how you doing?
Hey Logan, I'm good, thanks.
Not too bad. Good to catch up, and I mean it's good to start off this podcast again, which I have sadly been neglecting for the last few years. But I'm hoping to have a good interview, and I'm hoping to sort of catch up on what's been moving in the last couple of years in the nuclear space in Australia, because there actually has been a fair bit going on. But anyway, look. Anyone who's sort of been remotely interested in nuclear in Australia have probably come across your name and what you've been up to in the last 12 months or so. Do you want to give us a bit of an introduction of yourself and what you do and how you've got to this point?
Yeah, so I'm Tyrone de Lisle, and I kind of came to politics about 10 years ago. And really it was the refugee situation that really kicked me into politics. And I joined the Greens and started getting involved in community activism around climate change, a bunch of environmental issues. Since then I've worked with, refugee rights groups, various community groups on environmental projects. So I was in the Green Party up until 2017, and then was closely aligned with them and working with members to change policy within the party. We felt that there was a few things there that could change. But just moving through that quickly, I'm now working with RePlanet, which is an environmental NGO that just launched in Europe, with an eco-humanist perspective, including things like nuclear energy, genetically modified organisms, cell-based meat, for instance, a really technological approach that looks to bring about human prosperity while also reducing our environmental impact. So, and that's what I've been doing, and also over the last 18 months I started really getting into nuclear activism with a group called Greens for Nuclear Energy, which was a group of Greens members who kind of approached me and were like, oh look, we want to help shift the position of the party on nuclear energy, but we're kind of a bit scared to stick our name to this. Do you want to be the public face of it?
Do you want to be the guy who sticks his head over the
trenches?
That's right.
Because we know that you're happy to tangle with the party on some tough issues. So I was like, okay, I'm not a member anymore. They can't really touch me on this. I'll help you out. So
I was wondering about that. I was wondering, ooh, Tyrone's been sort of a member of the Greens and been talking a lot about this pro-nuclear sentiment. I was wondering if that actually had caused a bit too much of a ruckus and ousted you from the party, but you'd already left prior to making these statements.
Yeah, so yeah, okay. I had left for a few reasons that aren't really relevant to what we're talking about tonight.
Yeah, gotcha.
But yeah, so I was, willing to put my hand, stick my hand up and represent this group and publicly advocate to that. But we've had a lot of pushback from the party and from groups like Friends of the Earth. I actually had my own little stalker from Jim Green a couple of weeks. Of quite intense bullying on and harassment and following me around online. So that kind of really spooked the other guys.
Okay.
that were within the group, and they kind of said to me, look, we're not sure if we want to keep pushing this publicly.
Okay.
And then I also tried to join the party a couple of months ago leading up into this election, because I thought, you know, I can maybe have a better impact if I'm in the party talking to people and putting my neck out whilst also being open to internal issues, which these other members are who are looking at putting it forward. But, you know, they basically said to me, look, we don't want you back. because, you know...
They pulled up the bridge and closed the gate.
That's right. And yep. It's not really... it's not really that, you know, that there was anything really that I was doing wrong within the party. It was just that I challenged a lot of the long-held policies that they had. Like, one of the big ones that there was kind of a bit of a fight over was with urban planning. I just said to them, look, you can't say at one end, no, we're not going to build any new homes out on the edge of the city, but not allow any urban development in the city. You know, people got to live somewhere.
Yeah.
So I really like streamlining that. And that leads into my nuclear activism as well, you know, is that we've got to have evidence-based policies, whether it's in the Greens, whether you're in Labor, Liberals, etc. You've got to have more than just an ideological entrenched view.
That actually brings me into my next sort of position, because I just thought, how did you sort of find your way into being a nuclear energy supporter? Was it one specific thing, or was it a number of things, or what was that story for you?
Well, like most Greens, and like most people, I think, in the general public, I was, you know, skeptical of nuclear, especially going into the Greens. I was, you know, seeing their position and was like, okay, what they're saying is making sense to me. And so I became quite anti-nuclear at first. And then around as I started falling out with the party, I guess I kind of started questioning some of the other aspects of policy and started looking around to go, well, you know, where do I fit? Where do my policies fit? And then I was actually thinking about this the other day. What really kicked me into it? And it was that other Greens members and environmental activists started coming to me and saying, hey, look, we can't support renewables because there's this radioactive, you know, pile of an industry that sits on top of it over in China because, you know, they're digging up all these resources for renewables, and it's also causing, you know, radioactive piles of waste and stuff. I'm like, what? This seems ridiculous. Like, we've got to support something. We can't just be...
You can't be bananas.
Yeah, so I was looking into the radioactivity in these waste piles that these Greens were referring to, and I was starting to look at the radioactivity levels, and I just became really interested in whether, you know, what level of radioactivity becomes harmful. You know, is this something that we need to worry about enough to cancel renewables? Because we've got to have some form of energy. We can't just be against everything. And the more I looked into it, the more I started realizing, hang on a minute, you need a really high dose of radiation for it to have a negative public health outcome. And so I started just looking more and more into that literature, and then I just started looking deeper into nuclear energy, and revisiting my assumptions around how safe it was. And then I started realizing, hang on a minute, it's not as dangerous as I was led to believe or as I had initially thought. What else had I, you know, misinterpreted about nuclear energy? And because usually the safety hurdle is the biggest bar to cross, you know, for people, because they have this this image of what nuclear is, and it's this big, scary, you know, toxic energy source that's going to harm us. So once you cross that barrier, at least for me, it was, well, what else is there do I need to understand about this? And, you know, looking into the IPCC, and I started going, well, what do they say about nuclear? And they were saying, well, look, the real issue with nuclear is that there's a lack of public acceptance of nuclear. Otherwise, it is a really useful tool for our decarbonisation efforts. And then I just continued to look at the challenge of and the scale of what we face in terms of moving to clean energy. And I just was like, wow, we need nuclear. there's no reason here to exclude it. You know, the safety issue is not like an issue that people really think it is.
I think the issue is the safety. The evidence is there, and you can, if someone is prepared to listen, you can explain that and generally bring someone across. I personally think the big issue we have at the moment, the one that is somewhat more intractable, is the cost of new build, especially in the West. I mean, if you're China or South Korea, you can probably get over that fairly easily. But the cost in the West, there is still a long road to get back to where at least the United States and probably even France, back to where they used to be.
Yeah, so that's definitely an argument that I see against nuclear, is the cost. But the more I look into it, the more I realise that, hey, if you take these big energy projects, and a nuclear project, you know, the traditional nuclear reactors, they're big energy projects. And if you take a renewables project, the solar or your wind farm, and you scale it up to the level that these large nuclear reactors are, you know, you're talking about the same level of investment and commitment over time frames and things like that.
Sun cable.
That's an example. You know, you're talking about tens of billions of dollars. You're talking 6 to 10 years, and a lot of it comes down to the financing and the risk. And a lot of countries have, you know, like governments have backed in renewables, and that reduces their financial risk, which means that they get lower interest rates and things like that, which, you know, brings the cost down and makes them seem competitive. That we're not doing that for nuclear, because there is this perception by governments and politicians that the public are against it. And at least here in Australia, that was true 20 years ago. It's certainly not true now. You know, the latest polling that came out last year by Essential and Compass puts support for nuclear somewhere between 50 and 70%.
Oh, I never thought it that high. I remember 51%. I think that was Roy Morgan. Some polling saying it's as high as 70%.
Yeah, so there was some Compass polling that was done for I forget the institute now, but it was released in The Australian around September last year, which put it as high as 70%. But if you look at, say, the more conservative Essential polling, you've got 38% of Greens who are in support of nuclear energy in Australia, with 11 unsure. Labor's 42% in support, 19 unsure, 65% support amongst coalition, 15% unsure, 47% support among others, and 15% unsure. But so general population is 50% support, 18% unsure. And, you know, a lot of that unsure would be people that would likely support nuclear, but they don't know enough information to answer, you know, a little question on a polling. So, you know, I think governments underestimate just how much support and willingness there is, especially if you frame the question in the context of us needing to decarbonize and move towards a clean energy system. Because if we're going back to the Greens, for instance, our group, when we were talking to other Greens, it was all about we have this huge challenge that we face. It's not just electricity that we need to decarbonize. It's the entire energy system. It's all our transport. It's the heating and cooling of our homes. It's producing the feedstock for fertilizers and things like that. It's just absolutely a huge challenge, and trying to do that with by limiting our options just down to solar and wind. I mean, the Greens are even against hydro, so that
doesn't leave that limit doesn't leave a lot of options.
No, it doesn't. It really, really doesn't. You know, we were saying to people, look, we need these options on the table, and they became open to it because they want climate action. They want to change to a clean energy system. So that's if you frame it in that context, people, at least those concerned about climate change, will let their guard down and realize and be open to what you're saying about nuclear. So that was really the framing that we took. And it was successful, and I think it scared a lot of people within the Greens and the environmental movement.
Yeah, right.
You know, we would get into spaces like Friends of the Earth and ask questions. You know, why are you only presenting one side of the story? And they would go, oh, you're not real Greens. You know, get out of our forum, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's like they're really, really entrenched.
Yep.
But their voice is... they get too much coverage for who they actually represent. It's an increasingly smaller group of people who hold those really absolutist views around energy and environmental perspective. People are changing and becoming, you know, more open to the idea that, you know, we need all the technologies and all the options on the table.
If we could circle back to, so you mentioned the Greens for Nuclear Energy, and I must admit I saw them pop up on Twitter. They put themselves a Twitter account, 6 to 12 months back or something. You said this was a group within the Greens that then approached you. Like, is this kind of like an organised group within the Greens that is trying to push for this, say, for nuclear to be included? Or can you tell us a little bit about that or who they are?
Yeah, so it's just an informal group of members and supporters of the party. So people who are closely aligned, but not necessarily wanting to jump into them and become a member. And they're from, you know, all across Australia, and they just were kind of meeting informally, you know, on Facebook and things like that. And they approached me and just said, look, we've got this little group where we've been trying to advocate within our branches and within the state bodies for nuclear, and we're just feeling like we're getting stonewalled, and there's gatekeepers who don't want to let us take this discussion further, and we want to try and reach other Greens members and supporters publicly. So we got active on social media, and we got a good response. Lots of people, you know, coming on to the pages and saying, look, it's so great to see this. But there's a lot of hesitation there as well, you know. People don't like to break from their, you know, their tribe, and nuclear is seen as something that breaks you from your tribe if you're a Green. So a lot of them, you know, felt scared to put their names to things and to be public about it. But they would have conversations within their branch and things like that. But you know, these are mostly younger Greens who, you know, look back at this policy and they go, look, this is a relic of decades ago. And we can understand why it was there. You know, the fear of nuclear weapons and total annihilation. It was the Cold War. We can understand why older people are scared and why it was entrenched in the party. But that was then, and this is now. And what we know now about climate change and about nuclear, the industry itself, you know, the record that it's proven over these decades, is that, you know, we want to have a discussion about nuclear. So that's really what that group is about. And they've kind of gone a little bit underground after being spooked by Jim Green and some pushback from within the party. But I hope that they, you know, get the courage to come back and advocate for that position, because it's one that I think is crucial if we're to, you know, move Australia forward into this clean energy future, but also have, you know, energy security and energy independence and things like that as well. So I also, something that I believe and some in the group believed as well, is that it would end the climate wars in Australia. You know, it's a way to bridge the divide between those who really want climate change and those who want energy security. You know, like people like Barnaby Joyce and Matt Canavan. You know, they're saying we need nuclear for totally unrelated things to climate change.
Mm.
But they would jump on board if the Greens said to them tomorrow, look, we'll compromise and we'll support nuclear for climate, and you support nuclear for that, and it could end the climate wars. That is a view that we were taking as well. Was that?
Yeah, I think it's definitely, and not just in Australia, but something that is repeated in governments abroad as well. What you have a Greens party that kind of splits the vote with your left leaning party, and they form, if you will, a coalition to make government and to gain power. And I think it's, what was I listening to earlier? It was, I think it was the Australian Nuclear Association just had their AGM, or their big get together, and they had now I can't think of his name off the top of my head, but I think it was the head convener of the Friends of Nuclear Energy Committee group in the government. He was saying, this is a big issue. If you want Labor to cross the floor and to accept nuclear as an option, which you're going to need if you're going to need that bipartisan support, if you want the rules to change in Australia, you're going to need to get the Greens on board, because they are sort of splitting the vote on that issue. So for Labor to accept nuclear puts them at great risk of losing a lot of power, or additional power, to the Greens, which is something that they're not... Well, you can understand why they're not willing to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's this idea that if Labor or the coalition were to go to openly support nuclear, that there's going to be this huge environmental financial machine that will come out and outspend the parties on the election. So I can understand why there's reluctance there. And I definitely think that the Greens have a role to play when it comes to, if they want sensible energy and climate policy, they need to be willing to be open-minded on things like nuclear. And if you look overseas, especially in Europe, as I've been working closely with Greens overseas in Europe and others in Europe, where coalitions in government are, you know, a norm rather than the exception, like in Australia, the Greens really hold back climate policy because they're so staunchly anti-nuclear. Like in Belgium, for instance, you've got the energy minister, which is from the Greens party, advocating that they should replace all their nuclear with gas-fired generation within the next couple of years.
It's astonishing. And yeah.
Even if it makes the emissions higher, they're willing to do that because you know, a decade or two from now, we'll have the renewables that will displace that gas. And it just makes no sense. And you've got other parties on the left and on the right or at the centre who are saying, we want more climate policy, but we can't do it because the Greens are actually holding us back, ironically. And I just am so frustrated with that. And there are Greens overseas who are frustrated with this as well. The Finnish Greens, for instance, they went from in the early 2000s walking out of government over nuclear because they were anti-nuclear, and now they are pro-nuclear, and they are pushing their fellow Green colleagues in Europe and saying, "Hang on a minute, we need to review this because we're actually holding progress back on climate action."
Now that's they're the interesting case at the moment. This is actually sort of ties into my next question, because I think it was the Stand Up for Nuclear events for 2020, which is last year. For the last 2 years, they've been essentially online because of the cough. But you managed to organise an interview with Finnish Greens. Now I'm probably going to butcher the pronunciation here, but Ate Hajan.
Ate Hajane.
Ate Hajane. Greens MP in Finland.
I probably butchered it as well, but it's closer.
Sorry?
I said I probably butchered it as well, but it's
close. Well, he can
still forgive me.
Yeah, message or something and let me know how to say it correctly. But yes, you organised an interview with him for Stand Up for Nuclear 2020. So, do you want to sort of go on about how you arranged that and maybe a bit more of a discussion that you're having with Greens abroad?
Yeah, so as our group, Greens for Nuclear Energy, were starting to gain some traction online, I got approached by Joe Lackenby from the Australian Nuclear Association, and who said, look, there's this Stand Up for Nuclear event. Have you heard about this? And I was like, no, haven't heard about it. I'm very new to the scene.
Yep.
And so we started talking about, what our group could contribute to that event here in Australia. And we decided as a group to try and reach out to the Finnish Greens and do a Greens Talking to Greens event as part of Stand Up for Nuclear. And I originally reached out to the party itself, but I didn't hear anything back. I found a group on Facebook which was called Greens for Science and Technology, which is a Finnish Greens group that were a formal part of the party, and they advocate for things like nuclear energy and GMOs and things like that. And they said, great to hear from you, we'll add you to our WhatsApp group, you can jump in there, introduce yourself. And so I introduced myself and just said, we'd like to host this event. Is there anyone interested in talking to us about how the Finnish Greens came to be open to nuclear? And Atta said, yeah, I'd be happy to talk to you. He's actually a member of government, an MP over there. And we had a really great, honest, open chat about how their party went from being anti-nuclear to being open to nuclear. And it was, very similar to the way that the Greens for Nuclear Energy group came about. It was that younger people within the party were concerned about climate change. They were looking at the evidence. They were looking at the IPCC. And they just started talking about it. They just started saying, look, we need to review our position on nuclear. Here's what the scientific bodies are saying. Here's what the consensus is around nuclear. And the way that their party is structured allowed for a more open and robust discussion around the issue of nuclear. Something that we feel that the Greens in Australia hasn't really allowed. And it was great to hear that they had that democratic process, and that you know, they've still got MPs in Parliament who are not so keen on nuclear. They've still got members of the party that aren't so keen on nuclear. But overall, they have a technologically neutral approach to energy and climate policy. So if it can get us to where we need to go, we will support it. And if the evidence stacks up, we will support it. And I think that's a great position to have. And I think being part of government is another way that it shaped their party, was that they had to represent the majority of the public and the public view, which is shifting towards nuclear. I think if the Greens were to get into government and have to actually, you know, represent the public, they would have to come to a position where they have to negotiate and start representing a more majority view rather than this narrower view. It was a really good discussion, and it's available on Facebook and on YouTube if you just search Greens Talking to Greens or a Greens for Nuclear Energy Australia on YouTube or on Facebook. You should be able to find it.
I'll see if I can find a link and I'll add it to the show notes. That'd be good.
Yep, sounds good.
That's great. Now hang on, you mentioned there was, obviously I want to get to Fusion Party and the upcoming election fairly soon, but you mentioned there was another organisation you're working with at the moment, which I hadn't heard of. Red something or other?
So they're called Replanet.
Replanet. And tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, so they're an environmental NGO that just officially launched in Europe about a month or two ago. And they're a collection of European citizen groups and environmental NGOs, which they've got more of an eco-modernist, eco-humanist approach. So they've got chapters in, you know, Sweden and Finland and the Netherlands, Belgium, Spain, etc. And so I am doing their social media and online campaigns with them. And at the moment, their big campaign is to switch off Putin, which is a way of standing in solidarity with Ukraine, you know, because for Europeans, this is a huge moment for them. And part of that is to say, well, if we're going to cut off all these, you know, this gas reserve that we've, you know, been relying on for so many years now, Europe is relying on, we're going to have to take these other measures to ensure our energy security. And they've done a bunch of polling, which shows that, you know, the majority of Europeans support nuclear, like a massive build-out of new nuclear. They support relaxing planning legislation to speed up the deployment of nuclear and renewables. So they're doing a lot in that space in advocating for environmental progress, but also, you know, peace and human prosperity. So it's a great organisation, and we're looking at starting a chapter up here in Australia in the near future. So
watch out for
that'll be exciting. So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
All right. So Where was I? Yes, so the Fusion Party now, from what I understand, they're an amalgamation of several minor parties, and this includes the Science Party. You're doing a bit of work for them at the moment. So, what's keeping you busy with the Fusion Party?
Yeah, so as I mentioned earlier, after they basically said, we don't want you back, this being the Greens, I was like, okay, well, I want to put my efforts into something.
Yep.
Into a political party, because, you know, it's what I'm really passionate about. And I looked around and was kind of like, well, what parties fit my values? And so I've joined the Fusion Party they've got a couple of sub branches, which are come from the formation of the different parties. So
which parties are they? I think it's Fusion. Sorry, no, Fusion is Science Party, Pirate Party, and there's two others, I think.
So there's the Secular Party, yep, and the Vote Planet and Climate Emergency Parties.
So five of them.
Yeah. Yep. So I'm in the Pirate branch of the Fusion Party. Yeah, that's it. So I'm working with them at the moment on the election, and it's been really great. It's a fantastic group of people. It's a very young party, so they're both in terms of the demographic, but also in terms of, you know, being new on the political scene. So, you know, they're really open to new ideas and campaigning methods. So it's been fantastic to work with them and to be able to lend some of my experience to that effort as well, which has been great. And Fusion, they have a policy of wanting to lift the prohibition on nuclear energy. They aren't pro-nuclear fission because, you know, there's still some concern around that. Basically, they don't see that there's public support for it, but they really want to see investment in nuclear technology, especially fusion technology. There's, you know, some great work being done on nuclear fusion technology at the moment, and they want to see Australia as part of that. So they're not all the way to where I hope they would be on nuclear policy, but I think that's a great start. Is, you know, if we can lift that prohibition, it opens a whole bunch of opportunities.
Yeah. I mean, my gripe has always been, because that's come across from the Science Party, which from my understanding was kind of a fraction off the Green group that wanted to look at some of the things that traditionally Greens weren't going to give any consideration to, like GMOs and nuclear power and whatnot. And I had read their policy, and I think it's always been that, yeah, we should lift the prohibition and we should invest in Generation 4 and fusion and that and this, that and the other. I think, okay, well, that's fine. But always, then they'd come out with something like the 800% renewables policy, and I thought, that's what they seem to be leading with. That's what they take to elections. And I'm thinking, yeah, I'm not sure that this promotion, even though it's in the policy, I'm not sure that this is something that they're providing anything more than lip service to, which is, I was hoping for more from the Science Party, but that's just the way it is, I suppose. But yeah, look, it's good to know that we've got people over there that are working at trying to sort of change the policy in that regard.
Yeah, and like any party, there's going to be candidates who are more enthusiastic about a certain policy than others, and that's certainly the case with Fusion. You know, you've got some candidates who are really interested in nuclear fission and what it can offer, and then there's others that are, you know, happy with the way the policy is at the moment. So it's definitely a live discussion within the party, because it was something that, you know, the Pirates were open to as well. So it's something that the party is going to, I hope, consider in the future.
How did that come about? Because my understanding of the Pirate Party is they are mostly focused on things like protection of data and internet privacy and things like that. Is that accurate? And if that's the case, where does the interest in nuclear from the Pirate Party come from?
Look, I can't talk to that too much because I'm fairly new. Okay. I know a little bit about it, but they definitely have a focus on civil and digital liberties. But they're very open to technology and looking at the economics of how we shift to clean energy and things like that. So
yep,
there's been an openness to nuclear there.
So there might be like a technophile undercurrent there, and that feeds into the we'd like to know more about nuclear fission.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
It's very much of this, you know, modernism and things like that, which digital age is a part of. So that's what I would say where it comes from.
Yeah, gotcha. All right. Okay, so, look, as mentioned, and you know, as I've sort of been gone dark, there's been quite a bit happening in the nuclear power debate in Australia, but even abroad there's been quite a number of developments in the nuclear space. So the Olkiluoto has entered service in Finland, and I think that's, now that they've switched it on, it's been doing very, very well. At this stage, there's some very promising developments in the Diablo Canyon situation. It sounds like the current governor is making statements saying it like it should be saved. So those been of a have been very encouraging. We've also seen some things that have been quite discouraging. So, namely, we've got Germany's insistence on closing the last of their fleets, despite the energy and political situation in the European region. You know, what do you have any sort of particular outlook or anything that you sort of look to abroad that you think is relevant to Australia or nuclear more generally?
Look, it's really an interesting question. I've been really fortunate over the last, you know, 12 to 18 months to network with some really incredible, passionate people in this space, right across the political spectrum. You know, you've got people who, you know, are Greens, socialists on the left, all the way through to, you know, more libertarian types on the right. And there's a real passion and drive for bringing about nuclear for a whole range of reasons, but definitely for climate action. So, you know, there's been this push in California to save Diablo Canyon on the basis that you're letting all this clean energy go away for a less secure grid that's going to be more reliant on fossil fuels. So, I'm hopeful that the movement will continue to build, especially as people become more concerned about climate change. I mean, you've got Xeon Lights in the UK with Emergency Reactor. She's former Extinction Rebellion. She's got a great presence around, you know, environmental reasons to support nuclear. And you've got Chris Kiefer in with the Decouple podcast, which is a fantastic podcast. I recommend people go check that out. It covers more than just nuclear as well. Lots of topics. Fantastic. But he's been doing some great work with Canadians for Nuclear Energy in pushing back against this narrative that we need to close down all our nuclear in order to decarbonize and make way for renewables. And you're saying, well, hang on a minute, we've actually got this great technology that's providing lots of jobs in Canada, and it helped us, you know, push coal out in Ontario, and we've got one of the cleanest grids in Ontario, but you know we're going to go back to gas if you don't let us refurbish Pickering nuclear plant. And so there's been this real groundswell and grassroots movement pushing back against, you know, these big environmental groups that are, you know, I would say, frankly, have gotten really lazy, and they're sitting on stacks and stacks of cash, but they're just pushing these really tired old talking points that are just not helping the world move forward. Whether you think that's for energy security, whether you think that's for reducing air pollution, whether you think that's for jobs or climate action, I see this new generation just coming forward and saying, look, the old guard are just not doing it for us. And there's these new organisations popping up for nuclear and a whole other reason, a bunch of areas, so like Replanet, for instance, with GMOs and cellular meat and things like that. Mm. So, yeah, I'm really hopeful that within the next decade in Australia, we're going to see the prohibition lifted, and we're going to start investigating, you know, getting nuclear online in Australia. So, yeah.
I almost think it's going to be an inevitable in Australia. It just happens to be, well, the issue is going to be when. I mean, September last year, the AUKUS announcement for the nuclear submarine. So, we're going to have nuclear submarines, so we're okay to use the technology to defend the nation, but we're still going to have the legislation to outlaw it powering the nation. I mean, you're right. It's like that. It seems to be that that position of anti-nuclearism, it just keeps getting smaller and smaller and smaller until it's, I suppose, eventually it just disappears. It just seems to be on shakier and shakier ground. But I could be wrong, and I mean, look, the legislation's been very effective thus far, but to a certain degree, I think we're just going to be dragged kicking and screaming into repealing that prohibition.
Yeah, and what I would say to your listeners is be bold. Don't be afraid to break with your tribe and point out where where they're wrong on nuclear or any issue. Just stand up for what you believe in, point out the evidence, talk to your friends and family on nuclear and a range of issues, and be bold. You know, have to take that step and be courageous, because there'll be people that will step up next to you, and we can, that's how movements are made. So let's just do it.
I had there was a job I was on last year. It was the year before, it doesn't matter. But big construction project, freeway being built in the southeast suburbs of Melbourne. We had a sustainability guy, and he was sort of looking at all the things where we were using recycled materials and certain admixtures and reduced cement contents and things like that. And that was all fine. Like, I'm all happy for these features to be in projects. Like, they're all good, but I just think, well, if you want, like, so much of this can be improved by having a clean, abundant energy source to begin with. And I remember it was like a bacon and eggs day that the company put on. It was quite nice, but I was talking to this fellow, and, you know, I didn't deliberately bring it up, but, you know, I got talking about podcasts, and I got talking about the podcasts I listened to, and sort of the topic of energy, nuclear energy came up, but I couldn't believe it. This guy is, you know, sort of environment sustainability professional, says, "Oh, I don't think nuclear is a good idea." And I says, "Okay, how can you substantiate that?" And I went through a whole lot of different issues where it can help, and he says, "I'm still not sure it's a good idea." And it was really frustrating to me. I thought, "No, you are like an environment sustainability person. You don't have the luxury of not at least engaging with this topic beyond 'I don't think it's a good idea.'" I didn't say that specifically to him, but it was certainly sitting in my mind. I'm not sure if it was I'm not sure if I approached it the most tactfully sort of way, but he sort of did say, "Okay, I might have to look at this through gritted teeth." So I don't know if I made a friend there, but it just struck me as this is we almost seem to have a lot of these while good, well intentioned, but these environmental policies wrong-headed. We're trying to put the wagon in front of the horse, if you will. We're looking at all these ways to reduce particular high energy intensive resources like cement, which is a big one, in concrete, and okay, that's all good, but I think there's better, more efficient things that we should be looking at first, and cleaning up the energy supply in an effective way is going to be one of them, or should be one.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's this really big push for electrify everything. And if we electrify everything, that electricity needs to be, one, clean, but it needs to be rock solid and reliable. And I just don't see that that's going to happen with renewables alone. And that's a big reason why I push for nuclear as well, is that the energy security aspect of it, you know, it gives you that support when on call power, when they're just, you know, the wind isn't blowing and the sun isn't shining. You know, Europe saw last year when there was a record 60 year low
in wind,
in wind, where they saw wind generation down like 30% in a lot of areas. And they had to fall back on fossil fuels. And if we don't want to fall back on fossil fuels, then we need to,
we need something else. It needs to be reliable.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. Look, that's coming up very close to the hour. Is there anything you'd like to finish with, or anything at all? Or
I'd just like to say, if people are interested, they can go to Facebook or Twitter and just search for Australians for Nuclear Energy. That's my group that I'm working with, advocating for nuclear energy in Australia. And just back to my point before, be bold. You know, have the courage to step forward, because people will step forward with you when it comes to talking about nuclear or any issues. So, and that's how movement started. You know, that's how we got started. It's just people, everyday people, just stepping forward and having that courage to say, hey, look, I think we need to be doing things differently. And I think that's a good message to end on.
Excellent. Well, I think we might leave the podcast there. Tyrone Delisle, thank you very much for your time.
No worries. Thanks for having me, Logan.
No worries. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Two notes before I go forward. The gentleman presenting to the Australian Nuclear Association was the Honourable David Gillespie, MP, who was the co-chair to the Parliamentary Friends of Nuclear Technologies Committee. I'll leave a link in the show notes to the presentation online. Secondly, I use the term BANANA. As an acronym, for those unfamiliar with this term, it stands for Build Absolutely Nothing Anywhere Near Anything. As for my absence for the last few years, this is what happened. I fell into the trap of letting my enthusiasm for a new project run away from me, and I committed to more work than what I could sustain. And when I stopped, it was very hard to start again. Having said that, I've not been totally absent from this space. I submitted to all three government inquiries into the nuclear ban and was called to present at the federal one in 2019. Additionally, Australian Nuclear Association sponsored me to attend the Science Meets Parliament conference in 2021 and asked if I would address the Victorian chapter of the Quarterly Assembly of Fine Fellows, Epicureans and Raconteurs, or Quaffers, as they were interested in finding out more about the technology. I have to thank the Australian Nuclear Association for those opportunities. As for this podcast, stay tuned. I hope to have a new episode available before too long. This has been the Going Fishing Podcast, hosted by Logan Smith.